few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to attend the Brilliant Women in Digital Health Awards for 2023 in Melbourne, hosted by THT Plus members Telstra Health. And it was such a great evening where leaders from across digital health came together in Sydney and Melbourne to celebrate outstanding achievements of 9 exceptional women who've achieved excellence in contributions to digital health in the health and aged sectors. In this episode, I'm lucky enough to be joined by a number of these award recipients to learn more about their inspiring stories and the amazing work that they're doing in digital innovations in aged care, nutrition, health literacy, mental health and substance use, telehealth, virtual care, machine learning for medical imaging, eye care, and so much more. Collaboration starts with a conversation, Team Health Tech. Let's make it happen. This is Talking Health Tech with me, Peter Birch, featuring content and community about technology in healthcare. Between now and the end of June, we're conducting the 2024 Talking Health Tech audience survey. This helps us prioritize content, hone in key messages, and refine the show to make it even better. We also want to understand who the biggest cohorts of our audience are. So I'd love for you to take 5 or 10 minutes to have your say and complete the survey. Everyone who completes it goes in the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of THT Plus membership credits to put towards a membership for yourself as an individual or to help get the word out about your company. The link to complete the survey is in the show notes of this episode, or just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey. Sonika and Kate, how are you?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Amazing to be in the same virtual room with you only a week or so after attending the Brilliant Women in Digital Health Awards hosted by Telstra Health. I was in Melbourne. I'm normally from Sydney, but I managed to sneak in and fly under the radar and be in person there in Melbourne. So it's great to have you here in this conversation today. Sonika, it'd be great to start with you and learn a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, first of all. And yeah, it was a great evening and a good to see you there as well. I am an associate professor at RMIT University in Melbourne, Australia. I do both teaching and research over there. So from the teaching side, I teach subjects based on data science and artificial intelligence. And my research is in the space of computational biology and digital health. So here I deal with big complex data that comes from genetic side, which is the data on DNA, RNA, and protein biomolecules. And on the health side, I get data from hospitals or general practice or even wearables. And the objective of our research is to marry up this data from multiple sources and try and answer some questions. For example, you may have a known mutation, let's say for skin cancer, and then you marry this up with data for individuals' lifestyle or medical history or wellness, and then be able to predict some early risk for them. And that helps them, prepare for any, adverse, situation later on, and it may even be intervened early on and maybe avoided completely. So those are the kind of, questions that we ask from data.
Yeah. I love it. I'm very aligned with the conversations we have here on the podcast too. So we'll probably dive into a little bit of that in this conversation. Kate, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I love everything that Sonika's doing. I think it's the future. I started life training to be an ophthalmologist, and which is an eye doctor and eye surgeon, but became allergic to latex surgical gloves. And so that didn't work out quite the way we planned. And ended up having this really wonderfully weavy path through health innovation. I worked for McKinsey for a while, which was great because then I had a sort of business lens on the world, which I bridged with public health and medicine so that I was part of starting the Global Health Initiative at the World Economic Forum, which was looking at the question, what should the business response be to AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria, the diseases of poverty at the time. And then a whole bunch of other public-private partnerships around vaccines for the developing world. How do you get vaccines into the developing world at the same time as you get them into the developed world? Anti-vacciners, all sorts of different sort of topics where innovation, health, public-private partnerships came to play. But then I came home to Australia and sat with our professor of ophthalmology, who said, look, you know, there's all this brilliant diagnostic, digital diagnostic equipment, a brilliant digital equipment for monitoring eye disease, but we still correspond by letter and by fax. And if you take a beautiful image of the eye, and the back of the eye is a beautiful thing, and you stick it through a fax machine, you end up with a gray blob, which is exactly useless. And so we started talking about surely we could do something better than a letter, and that became Oculo, which is a digital clinical communication platform that links optometry, ophthalmology, primary care, and beyond, that is now used across Australia and New Zealand, does various other things. But then Oculo, that company that we co-founded with that professor of ophthalmology, Jonathan Croston, was acquired by a Finnish ophthalmic diagnostic company called iCare 2.5 years ago. And so I am now the head of strategy for iCare globally.
Amazing. What a journey. And that's it's interesting hearing those twists and turns. And it did remind me a little bit of hearing some of the acceptance speeches and also the keynote and the motivational talk from Jess as well at the award ceremony last week, hearing how, you know, you might go down one particular path and then whatever happens, it takes you down another. And at the time, it may not make sense, but I guess what leads you to where you are today, right?
Well, I think Jess was amazing to hear. And but it really reinforced what I've always been told, which is you learn so much more from failure and adversity than you do from things going right.
And Sonika as well, you know, hearing your acceptance speech as well. I got to say, I think the air conditioning was turned up a little bit high. I think there was a few kind of watery eyes from my side just hearing some of the words that people have shared. But it must mean a lot to you as well.
Yeah,
right?
No, absolutely. See, it's always, you know, these kind of opportunities are really, you know, where you stop and, you know, think about your journey and reflect on, you know, where all you've been and, you know, thinking about all those failures and your efforts and, you know, perseverance and then leading to little or big successes. So it's definitely, you know, a great recognition for, you know, the work that me and my team have been doing over the years. And also, you know, what I was talking about in my speech as well that night is that it's a great recognition for someone like me who is, you know, comes from a diverse background, culturally, linguistically. I wasn't born in Australia. I grew up in a non-native English environment and then building a career in another country. So it's been quite a bit of journey. And it's good to see that, you know, I was able to achieve whatever I have achieved so far. So such awards and recognition makes me maybe a role model for someone else like me. And I think diversity is very, very important. And we do see that we do have a lot of scope to increase diversity in all tech fields, you know, across all various STEM areas. So I'm very happy to
absolutely.
Be here.
Oh, on that last point, I imagine too, you know, like we talk about, you know, in one of your areas of expertise being in the data side, if we don't have that diversity in that representation, even in the data set. So it's the data's no good. And that concept, I guess, has to run all the way through healthcare.
Absolutely. So if we develop something, my research is all data-driven and digital health is growing at very, very fast pace. And thanks to all the technological development in various areas, like we have better compute, better storage, better algorithms. And now we can make sense of this data faster. But if we have, you know, inherent bias in the way we are collecting the data or analyzing the data or even interpreting the data, and sometimes we have our own, you know, unconscious biases because the way we grew up, we may end up, you know, interpreting the data a different way. So at all these different levels, I think all this awareness, first of all, is very, very important. And then we also need to put that into practice, that when we are developing models, we have enough representation from the population that we are targeting it for. So for example, if I'm developing a model to predict hypertension or high blood pressure, then and I've collected data that only had like, you know, 1% of pregnant women in it, then I can't generalize that, you know, blood pressure prediction for pregnant women, because one, there's not enough representation. And as it is in pregnant women, the profile of blood pressure will be different than normal population. So it's very, very important that, you know, we are aware of, you know, these factors that can affect the analysis.
Such a good point. So critical. Yeah.
I think it's really interesting too. Even I've just spent the last few days in an AI meeting, and it was, you know, again, all these meetings now that are all about ChatGPT, and so how the evidence base as it exists today is going to inform, you know, all of the AI of tomorrow, today basically, and. But of course, we know that the evidence base is based on clinical practice, and clinical practice remains so often anecdotal. And so we're training it on the old biases. And, you know, having trained as a doctor, you know, the training is still so anecdotal and not always evidence based, and certainly, you know, not personalized, but that's how we want to use it, is for that personalized medicine. So I think we haven't figured out how to back solve the issue that Sonika's calling
Absolutely.
Out.
And something I was on a bit of a tangent, but related, I was thinking as both yourself, Sonika, and Kate were, you know, reflecting on some of the work that you do and the problems you're looking to solve. You know, we're very quick to talk shop, you know, even when we're supposed to be speaking about, you know, celebrating some wins and reflecting. I think that when we're so deep in solving problems, particularly coming from, whether it be from a clinical or a scientific or a research background, you know, I'm going to hazard a guess and say there's if you're not taking the opportunity to stop and reflect and look back and perhaps see what you've done and celebrate that, then you probably just continue on and move on to the next thing, and you don't really get that full picture. Kate, is that am I kind of on the right path here?
No, it's so true. I think, you know, we always talk about mountains beyond mountains, which is a Haitian phrase, you know, where when you climb, you've reached the top of a mountain and you can see the next one, you've earned the right to go forward. And one of my early investors in Oculo is a lovely South African man by the name of Mark Kirkby. And he cited Nelson Mandela, who said, yes, that when you get to the top of a peak, you must stop and look back so you remember how far you've come. And we are very bad at it because we're so busy and you know, juggling family lives, juggling our brilliant teams, juggling the next thing. And, you know, that moment to pause and to celebrate, it's very rare. And so it was very nice for Telstra Health to create that space. And I absolutely agree with Sonika that the hope that it also inspires, because there are very few role models in digital health, full stop, and very few female role models. And, you know, part of my journey with Oculo was... I was lucky enough to be in the Springboard Enterprises cohort, and Springboard is a group that started in the US focusing on female founders and CEOs. And they took us for a boot camp. Brilliant CEO of Springboard at the time, Amy Millman. And I remember sitting there saying, how could you take me out of my business for a week? Like, don't you think I'm important? But, you know, like, how could you? But I was an idiot. But the thing was, we spent an entire week hearing about the CEO she and the CEO she. And after a week of that, I felt so much better about everything I was doing, and so inspired to know that there are so many women who are making such differences, running great businesses, running great organizations, and innovating and changing how the world works.
No, and absolutely. And also, like, these events have been really helpful in building new networks. Like, I met so many people the other night that I would not have ever met otherwise. And then you realize that there are lots of, you know, common links, common interests, and, you know, you can find other people to work with. So I think from networking point of view as well, I think these
events are very... And I can only imagine as well, too, because I would think the same for myself, but it would be, when I heard some of the acceptance speeches, a lot of the times it almost came from a place of, you know, people still coming out and having these amazing stories and being able to reflect on such achievements and almost feeling like either directly saying it or implying that they kind of feel like they didn't, like they were surprised, or it's like they didn't quite feel like they belong on this stage when absolutely everyone, you know, like, so I feel like, to your point, it's not just being that role model for others, to be providing that reassurance that everyone kind of might have those feelings of, whether it be imposter syndrome or not having access to all the resources that everyone would have to be able to actually do some meaningful things that actually have a real impact.
No, absolutely. Like last year, I was a finalist for Women in AI Awards, and when the award, advertisement came out, I never thought I should be nominating myself. And then I heard from like two other women who reached out to me and said, like, you should put your application in. And I thought, no, I don't think I'm ready yet. But I'm glad that I did, and I was one of the three finalists. And it was a gala evening again, but that evening was really, you know, an eye-opener for me. Like, I met so many other amazing people working in the AI space, and you just feel suddenly, like, so empowered. I didn't win, but I felt like a winner that evening. And, yeah, and again, this year, there were other women leaders at my university. They're like, no, these are good opportunities. I think you should put application in. So, yeah, and otherwise, I would not have put myself forward for a nomination for such awards. So yeah, it's good to build that community and, you know, get that support and, you know, recognition or, you know, motivation to go for these things. Like, you have to win it to win it.
Absolutely. And if I took one of your lines just then, Sonika, to kind of round out this conversation, and I'll put to both of you, but I'll go to Kate. What would you hope that, you know, the celebration of these recipients, including yourself, might do? In particular, I think about, you know, Sonika's term of like, I'm not ready yet for that. And I think a lot of people might feel the same too, whether it be for putting themselves forward for an award or even for applying for a job or just doing anything. What advice would you kind of give to women, particularly in STEM or in digital health or wherever they might be, that might feel that they're not ready?
Well, I think there's so much evidence from all disciplines that women are, you know, slow to put themselves forward for a new role or a promotion or a pay rise or all of that. And, you know, similarly, I was nominated by an amazing woman, you know, so I'm really grateful to other women inspiring and mentoring and encouraging. And one of the things I sort of counsel people, women, when they're going for a job interview or something, is, you know, pretend that you're advocating for someone else. Because sometimes that lets you get over that, you know, reticence. But I think if you don't back yourself, nobody else is going to necessarily. So you just got to go for it. And it's tough. And there is imposter syndrome. And, you know, in medicine, I always joke that, you know, the perception of you is you're never even as good as your last exam. And so you undervalue your accomplishments because you don't stop and pause, you don't put them in context. You undervalue your skill set because you're so focused on the next thing. And so that is potentially rate limiting. I think the other thing, though, is my dad always had the advice that if you wanted the next great job, concentrate on doing a really good job in the job you're in. And so I think there's also this sense of, yes, you need to keep your antennae out and so on, but you also just need to be mindfully present with what you're doing day to day and looking for that opportunity to be true in yourself as you're doing it, because then other things will follow. Not always justly, but I guess that's how I believe it.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, Kate. And if I could just add just two more points there. One is that even if you're meeting half of the criteria, I think go for it. And sometimes you don't realize that, you don't keep count of all your, you know, achievements and successes and, you know, background that aligns with that award or whatever, you know, job requirement. But the questions that are asked sometimes make you think and explore all that information and put it all together in a way that, you know, then you start feeling, oh, actually, my profile wasn't as bad as I was thinking. And once you prepare for one award or one job application, that helps you to just rehash this for, you know, other awards. So, you know, it's all that effort you go through for the first time, I think it's worth it.
I think, you know, this award is, and you mentioned this, Sonika, is that, you know, it's called Brilliant Women. But of course, all of us stood up and thanked our brilliant teams. And so it's an opportunity to be able to, you know, shine light on the amazing work that the team has done.
I'm so grateful that we could capture even just a sliver of the inspiration and the vibes that came from the evening last week, both in Sydney and Melbourne from the awards. And I know Telstra Health plan to do these ongoing as well. So I'd encourage anyone else to make sure that they put their names forward or participate or recommend someone for the awards if not attend next year and be part of it because it is inspiration. So Sonika, Kate, I really appreciate you making the time to have a chat on the show. Thank you so much.
The Talking Health Tech podcast has evolved a lot over the years, all based on audience feedback. Now I need your help. Yes, you, to shape the future of this show. Between now and the end of June, we're running our biggest campaign to date in order to understand what makes the global healthcare ecosystem tick. Last time we ran our Talking Health Tech audience survey, we learnt 40% of our audience are clinicians, 77% of our audience tune in for professional development and market awareness, 8% of people listen to Talking Health Tech for competitor profiling, and only 2% of people listen to the podcast to fall asleep. And this time around, I can't wait to find out about your preferences for audio versus video content, which topics we should dive into more, preferences for hosts and formats and geographical reach and so much more. And don't worry, we'll be sharing all the insights once all the responses are collected as well. So if you're a supporter of Talking Health Tech and you can spare 5 or 10 minutes, please complete our 2024 audience survey. And to say thanks for your input, everyone who completes the survey goes into the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of credits towards THT Plus membership. Go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey or the links in the show notes of this episode as well. Salma and Francis, how are you?
Good.
Excellent. Excellent.
Great. Thank you so much. And I guess one of the... there's definite pros of having such wonderfully... busy, intelligent, and amazing women that have done some great things in digital health. But what that means sometimes is we can't all be in the same place at once. So I appreciate you also making time to chat with me as part of this broader episode about the great things that that you've done. So I heard your a little bit about what you do when I attended the Brilliant Women Digital Health Awards from Telstra Health a few weeks ago in Melbourne, and they happen in Sydney too. But it'd be great to hear from yourselves now about what you're up to. Francis, can I start with you?
Well, I want to wake up in a world where every person has access to the help that they need when they need it. And so for me, my particular focus is mental health. And we need a lot of help in mental health because as a community, we are not going all that well. Then, you know, and COVID has exacerbated that. And so my time is really devoted towards how we can developing digital and other technologies to help realize that dream. So to connect people with the help they need when they need it in a way that has meaning for them and also can empower them, I guess, teach themselves to be their own therapist. And so I develop, you know, digital apps and programs and things like that that target different mental health and alcohol and other drug use problems and really help people learn how to be their own therapist without having to leave their house, which sometimes is really hard, or come and get a specialist appointment.
Yes, absolutely. I want to dive into that soon because such an important issue to solve, but tricky one with a lot of opportunities with technology, but challenges as well. Salmia, tell me a little bit about you.
Okay, so how interesting, Francis, to hear about your work in mental health, because one of my recent projects actually is in the mental health area, though I've not done a huge amount of work in that area. So I've been working for the last 3 years, in fact, just at the time that COVID kicked in, with the Black Dog Institute, which is just next door here to the University of New South Wales in Kensington. I've been working with this team of researchers led by Dr. Mark Larson, who work in the space of suicide prevention. Right? That's a huge, huge, big space, of course. But I came in particularly to help them out with analysis of CCTV camera footage, which is recorded in public or semi-public places for the purpose of doing early warning, trying to come up with early warning of potential dangerous self-harming behavior, so that there is better chance that people could intervene and try and make sure that that dangerous behavior doesn't progress further into something even more dangerous. So that's roughly the space I've been working with them on for the last 3 years. But what's common between that project and lots of the other research we have been doing for over a decade in my group is basically a lot of image analysis. So we deal with images, with videos, and also non-image data combined with image data to solve a number of problems in the clinical medical space. So we work with physicians, with surgeons, with mental health researchers, as I mentioned just now, right? But what's common to all of these projects is that we build up teams of students, postdoctoral researchers, working together with the clinicians and the physicians and the experts in the domain to help and to help them solve a problem that's of interest to them. Right? So end of the day, they're all solving health issues, health problems, but we are the ones who try and provide a technical focus and try and keep everybody honest in terms of adherence to the data and getting the best that we can get out of the data.
So good. And what I love, you know, particularly about the work you're both doing and others that were acknowledged with the awards and just generally within the ecosystem, there's, you know, I find there's a lot of solutions, particularly whether it be in the software or technical side within healthcare, that all have good intentions and perhaps come from, whether it be from someone's own lived experiences or just generally from feedback or even gut feeling community. But what we need in healthcare, I feel like, is, the solutions that come from a basis of evidence that you know, you've both kind of alluded to as well. So you know, Francis, from the work that you're doing, it's great that at least a little bit of light can be shone on the example that you're providing within this space. Does that kind of message resonate with you?
It strongly resonates with me, and that's why I'm so passionate about research and the evidence base, because we can't just assume that these new technologies or these new ways of interacting or of seeking treatment for mental health problems actually work in the same way that face-to-face and traditional means have. So just because something's new and exciting and accessible doesn't mean that it works. And that's where the research comes in. And if we can do the research, and that's what we've all been doing to try to build that evidence base, it then creates that trust and the confidence in the public to use and integrate these technologies in a safe way. And so for many, many reasons, that message resonates with me entirely. And you've just, you know, spoken to my heart or my passion about why research is so important alongside all these exciting developments.
Sam, what about yourself?
Evidence is all about what we do, right? So we really need to be guided and driven by the evidence, which comes from the data, but also comes from confirmation from the domain experts. So whether you're clinicians or mental health researchers or what have you, right? So we have access to a lot of data. As we know, the world is awash in data, right? But the issue is how much of that is trustable, how much of it is clean, within quotes, how much of it is actually usable for building real products, right? That's a big question. Right? And the second part of data, of course, is who tells us which data is useful and which is not useful? That has to be the domain experts, right? It's not the computer scientists. It's not the ones who are developing the apps or the programs or the algorithms. So we don't know a lot about the application domain, and that information has to come from the experts. So a big part of what we do is working hand in hand with the experts and try and see if we can get into their workflow. Whatever we develop should really fit into their daily workflow. If we try and develop things which require additional effort and additional time, and even additional data on top of what they normally collect, it's not going to work. It might work for a short term, but in the long term, it's just not going to work at all, right? So a lot of the challenge that we face is, yes, there's lots of data, but how much of it is useful? Get the right advice for that. But also try and make sure that anything we do is something that can be easily embedded and woven into what the experts do in their day-to-day life. So working with clinicians directly is really important to us.
I'm wondering if I can jump in there, because that's what I really walked away with from the awards night just recently, and that is that the style of leadership that was being recognised with these awards is exactly what we need in this field and to make the most and realise the potential that the digital technologies have to offer. And that is that real collaboration, that real teamwork approach, and that common purpose to really help people. And so again, that's what I saw recognised in the award winners. So I'm hearing from Salma's chat now, it's all about how we come together across all of our areas of expertise and realise this potential together for our community. And I'd love to say that my experience of particularly brilliant women has been that's the style of leadership that they bring to teams and to challenges and problems like we're all talking about. And that's what really excites me about this award and this award series.
You know, as Salma pointed out, that in order for us to create, these evidence-based solutions that can be trusted, because they need that evidence to be trusted but used by the end users, we need to build that the trust and relationship with the whichever stakeholders are inputting the data, I guess, to be able to use the thing in the first place, which then gives us a credible base to build on. So there's some common threads that run throughout the process, and no matter how large or grandiose the solution is, in the end, it comes back in such a human-centered area for us to work in terms of healthcare. Some of these core principles are so important, and like you say, Francis, those fundamentals were kind of threaded throughout the conversations that were happening in the celebration at the awards a couple of weeks ago.
They sure were, and I loved hearing about it. I reckon, Sal, you and I could have a chat for hours and hours more, but so we'd bore all the listeners, I'm sure. But also, we've got to make sure that connection to the person that we're trying to work with and help is so important, because we might be developing solutions that they don't need or they don't want. And so it is that human connection that's always going to be important in any innovation, but I think particularly is in this digital world that we're in.
Yeah, so Francis, I agree with all that you're saying, and particularly working in the university context. This is where we are training our students, our future workforce, our future researchers, right? So these are the personnel who really need to be provided the right direction as well as the right opportunities and the environment to do their best, right? And it's actually going to work to their favor to try and give them the motivation to stick to the field, right? And if we make that process as smooth as possible and make the right connections for them and also provide them the right inspiration coming out from the end users, from the patients who benefit out of the research, but also the clinicians who are actually going to use the products. Right? So because we position ourselves as assisting the clinicians do their job much more effectively and in a more convenient fashion, given this inundation of data that we have all around us. So we are not trying by any means to try to replace what the physician is doing, but we are working hand in hand with them to try and provide them the best possible assistance. And that's part of the purpose of the university, to try and educate our students, but also make them see the big picture so that they know what they're working toward. Maybe it'll take 10 years, 20 years, not all products appear instantly on the scene. So we do take a long-term view, and that's the hardest to do, I think, in a fast-moving area like IT. So everybody's got an app, everybody has got the phone, they've got their laptops around with them, and people can do lots of really cool things very, very fast today, right? But we are actually looking into the future, what's going to be in demand and what's going to be vital in the next 5 years or 10 years or even longer than that, right? So that's the business we are in. And it's that's what makes our life, I think, really exciting, our work life here in the university really exciting, that we're working with lots of, bright minds, right? Just like the bright, the brilliant women that Telstra is rewarding, but really it's all about also our brilliant students, our brilliant collaborators.
If everything's going well in the work that you're doing and you're really clear on the vision and the, funding's landed and there's a few kind of boxes that get ticked, you don't need too much external motivation and to be reminded of what you're doing and why. It's those things only happen every now and then, at least from my own experience. It's all the other times that, things not necessarily aren't going your way. It's just that maybe when it's not clear or it's just not aligned with all the other kind of bits and pieces happening within your life, and that's when you need that that reminder, I guess, on what you're doing and why. I guess to round out the conversation, I'll give you both an opportunity to reflect, because I'd love your thoughts on, like, the for those that might be listening or that are in it, you know, the brilliant women that are out there that don't get to go to an awards ceremony just yet, any advice or at least things to remind in those times that it either might be difficult or just not overly clear on, like, what you're doing and why and how to kind of keep that path and have a meaningful impact, Frances?
Yeah, so I would say please keep in mind that, you know, the award is not just for a handful of brilliant women. It's for all the other brilliant men and women and students and collaborators, you know, who are behind the scene and who made this possible, made all these achievements and all these developments possible. And as I've been saying tongue in cheek to a number of people who are congratulating me, right? So I say it's not quite the Nobel Prize, but it's somewhat like the Nobel Prize, because, you know, today almost no research, I mean, all the Nobel Prize winners, almost nobody really wins it just based on solo work. There's a huge lab behind them and decades of work behind them, you know, consisting of maybe even dozens, if not hundreds of people behind them. And many of them do say in their acceptance speeches, you know, they thank their whole lab, right? It's not just an individual's work. So I think that's what I would tell the potential brilliant women out there. Please remember that you're joining a whole team, a whole group of brilliant researchers all over the world. And, you know, welcome and come along and contribute.
That came through on the night, didn't it, did Salma? It was that, you know, everyone got up and said, well, I feel a bit silly receiving this award because I am only one of a, you know, multitude in a team who's contributed to this incredible outcome. And so I'd encourage people to think about, you know, how they contribute in their team. But for me, it is a rocky road. It's also, so don't assume that for either of us or for any of us that we've only ever had success. We tend only to talk about success, but, you know, catch me on a Friday afternoon on when our grant outcomes and things have come out and it's not gone my way and I'm not talking about success then, because I'm a sore loser as well, because I'm just so passionate, you know, we're so passionate about what we do and how we do it. And so for me, the bit of advice that if I could give my younger self, much younger self or others out there, is to just understand what your purpose is and to connect to that purpose. And that purpose will not be about winning an award or a Nobel Prize or, you know, I won't say no if that ever comes along, but, you know, it's actually bigger than an accolade or a metric or a grant result. And if you can make sure that the work you do and the people that you surround yourself with help you stay connected to that purpose, then I think you are a brilliant winner every bloody day, no matter what the outcomes are, because we can't control those out. We can't control grant outcomes, award outcomes, all of those sorts of things, but we can control what we are passionate about and how we kind of show up in an authentic way for our jobs. And if we can be that sort of person, like, that's the sort of person I want my kids to see. And I hope we'll be able to find that as brilliant. And so that's my bit of advice, is to think about and stay connected to the things that are bigger than the awards.
What a great way to round out this conversation. It's such an important message to leave on. I appreciate everything that you've done and the time that you've taken to come and have a chat on the show and share those experiences. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You thank you for the opportunity. It's lovely to stop and reflect. It really is. So thank you.
Hey, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode. If you made it this far, you're the perfect person that I want to hear from. Our THT Plus audience survey is now open until the end of June, and I personally read every submission. In fact, if you leave a comment in the survey that you heard this promotion in a podcast episode, I promise I'll reply directly to you by email with a personal note of thanks. And I'll even buy you a coffee next time I see you in person. It's pretty easy. Just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey and have your say.
For more content and community about technology and healthcare, visit talkinghealthtech.com.